Introductions.
That sounds good.
So welcome everyone. My name is Jonathan Freebert, and thank you for joining the Voices for Innovation Getting from Now to Next webinar. We're excited to have two great presenters to talk to you today about some of the really interesting things that Microsoft Research is doing. First, let me introduce Allison Saltzer. And Allison has presented to VFI before in a previous role she was in when she was at SMB, but now she's in business development for Microsoft Research. And what she's really trying to focus on is helping commercialize some of our latest innovations and inventions. And as I think many of you saw in the email, Microsoft Research has over 1,000 researchers and engineers in labs around the world. They're at the forefront of machine learning, computer vision, speech, and artificial intelligence. And so Microsoft, and our external collaborations include efforts to prevent disease outbreaks, solve problems facing large cities, such as traffic and pollution. And Allison's really been focused on that. We also have with us David Molnar. And David, as you see, is a senior business research and innovation group leader. What he's leads an incubation group at Microsoft Research, where he's responsible for rapidly bringing innovative research technology to the market. David joined Microsoft Research in 2009 from University of California, Berkeley, where he focused on new methods for using automated analysis to discover security flaws in software. And at Microsoft, David works on a wide variety of product groups and customers to improve security software quality. And he's helping Microsoft find problems before the, quote, bad guys do. So with that, I will turn over to Allison. And again, if you have questions and you're on Skype, please put them into the IM. And if you're on the phone, just save it till the end. Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. Hello, everybody. I was going to say happy Friday, and then I realized that it's actually Thursday. So happy Thursday. So I'm Allison Salzer, and David, it looks like, has been detained for a few. So hopefully he'll join us. And if not, I'll be delivering most of the presentation. So I have been at Microsoft 11 years. You'll see the cowboy hat because I actually live in Denver, Colorado. So I kind of live the dream of having being able to work from anywhere on any device and do anything. And so in my tenure at Microsoft, I spent 5 years in enterprise sales, actually, 5 years in small business. So as Jonathan mentioned, I presented to VFI in the past around entrepreneurship and small business. And about 6 months ago, I got a new role, which is really a brand new direction for our company. And it's working directly with Microsoft Research. When I say, hey, I'm in business development for research, people say, well, wait, what? What does that mean? What does business development have to do with research? And so in the past, as Jonathan mentioned, we have over 1,000 researchers. We have 7 labs worldwide. And in the past, Microsoft Research has really been this dedicated group of incredible scientific talent working on all kinds of different projects, some of which graduated, for lack of a better word, into and were rolled into our existing products. So Microsoft Connect, which is part of Xbox, came out of Microsoft Research. Most recently, I think you may have seen press around Microsoft HoloLens, and we'll be talking a little bit about that further in the presentation. And many of the projects didn't, or we were working on very basic research that is really 10, 20 years in the future. And so this new group and my new role is a very different way of Microsoft thinking about research and being much more collaborative, much more innovative, and actually trying to generate new products, new services even faster, and even things slightly out of where Microsoft has traditionally played. And so that's my role at Microsoft, and I see David been able to join us now. You'll see both of our Twitter handles on there, as well as the Microsoft Research Twitter handle and the Microsoft Research blog and website. So do feel free to go out to the website. There is amazing videos that go in depth on all of the incredible projects we work on. And so unlike most presentations where we don't want you to go multitask, in this one, please do feel free. And with that, I'll turn it over to David. David, will you introduce yourself?
Hi, Allison. My name is David Molnar, and my background is on finding security flaws in the software that keeps our world running. I joined Microsoft from the University of California, Berkeley, about a little over 6.5 years ago. And what really attracted me to Microsoft research was this ability to marry both the long-term thinking that is the hallmark of academic style research with the broad impact that we can have through Microsoft products and services.
That's awesome. So to kind of set this up, you know, Microsoft Research, really for 40 years, our top scientists have been focused on what if and imagining, you know, even at the very beginning, that famous quote from Bill Gates, you know, what if we could have a desktop on or a computer on every desktop? Obviously, that's not only come to fruition, but we have multiple devices, you know, even as individuals, and it's really transformed the way our lives work. And so for research now, what they think about is really what's next, given where we are today with all of these devices, given the trends happening with Internet of Things, with ubiquitous computing, with compute power all around us and no longer limited to the actual physical device, with the power of the cloud, what could that enable, right? And really imagining, you know, 20, 30 years in the future to solve whatever problems that might come up with that. And so when we think about what's next, you know, our teams have really focused on what does that look like? And the concept for, you know, or rather the title for this presentation was The Invisible Revolution. David, will you give us some more context on how Microsoft Research thinks about what's next?
I'd be happy to, Allison. Today, we see devices already in our pockets, in our homes, in our cars, in our lives that create an invisible stream of data. I'm wearing a Fitbit right now. My television is sending information back to the manufacturer to help it, the manufacturer understand how I use it and what I can do to make it better. And what we think about in terms of research is how is all this data going to come together? And we call it the invisible revolution because it's not the obvious things like a shiny new PC or a new way of creating materials. It's the machine learning that helps us take all that data and turn into real actionable insights that help you live a better life. And what I and my colleagues at MSR do all day is say, what's it going to be like when every single thing in that home has a radio connected to it and some smarts? What's going to be like when everything is cloud connected? What problems can we solve with that that we couldn't solve before?
And then, you know, in terms of how this is going to change our lives, I think we're only beginning to scratch the surface of that. And so our teams are really trying to be way ahead in terms of that thinking. And the way that they frame up those challenges is really threefold, and they're pretty bold. And so it's how does this invisible revolution transform the limits of time, the limits of humankind, and the limits of computation? And so we're going to talk about those three things and give some specific examples. So first on the limits of time, now Microsoft, you know, for those of you that have worked with us for some years, you'll know that, you know, our primary focus is helping everything, every person be more productive, to have more time, to do more with the time that they have. And so, you know, even our products today, obviously Office 365, being able to work from anywhere on any device, the productivity that that enables is you know, transformative for many. I mean, a lot of people say that they live and die by their Outlook calendar, and certainly the connectedness of our email and our messaging and our ability to collaborate has transformed the way we work. But when we also think about time in the future, it's also how do you transform the limits of time. And so, for example, I had the honor this week of visiting NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, Pasadena, California. And so the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, they focus on the robotic exploration of space. So literally, they are the teams that have launched every single spacecraft into space, including the Mars rover. And our team has been working with the Jet Propulsion Lab on many different projects. This in particular is the way scientists right now are working at are working to imagine interacting, not even imagine interacting, to interact with the Martian terrain. So you'll see the Mars rover, and literally that scientist is using HoloLens to identify the different parts of the Martian terrain and identify different places where more scientific exploration could be helpful. So I think you might have seen in the news the exploration of water on Mars, but HoloLens really helps those scientists interact. Geologists on Earth or people that study science, they're able to actually pick up rocks and walk around on the terrain. And in this case, obviously, much more difficult to do in Mars. And so that's really one of the ways that we are working to transform time. The other aspect of time around productivity is around Cortana. There's been huge trends in artificial intelligence, intelligent agents. Obviously, with Apple Siri, Facebook has been working on a lot of projects. And Cortana is Microsoft's intelligent agent to really help you. And so I was traveling this week, as I mentioned. It was my son's birthday. He was very excited about his wireless headphones that he wanted to order, and he kept asking me when they were going to get there. And Cortana actually was able to just tell me, hey, let's track your package. Here's where it is. And with me just glancing on the phone in the airport while my son, who is 9, who just got his first phone, kept calling me to track it. So I was very grateful that Cortana was helpful in managing my time and my son's explorations or curiosity of and greed, quite frankly, greed. David, anything to add?
I would. I noticed on the IM there was a question about genetics. One of the things I really deeply appreciate about MSR is the ability to bring in people even from areas you wouldn't normally think of as core computer science. I have a colleague named David Heckerman, and one of the things that he's done over the years is really think deeply about how to use the power of the cloud to speed up research in genetics. I'm just going to go ahead and copy and paste his URL so people can look at it into the IM. But if you look at that, he's got a broad range of work on how to use the power of the cloud and the power of large-scale computation to really help scientists understand how we might have an HIV vaccine, understand cancer, understand the genetic basis of these diseases, which are terrible. And that's work that MSR has contributed to and been a leader in, to the point that we have an entire genomics research group that is supposed to help transform the way science is done. And that's the kind of thing that really brought me to Microsoft, is the opportunity to be at a place where those kinds of breakthroughs could be done.
Well, then I'll also add, it's sort of similar to genetics, but slightly different. I just posted a link to Project Premonition, where Microsoft Research is using mosquito drones and helping collect mosquitoes, because interestingly enough, mosquito-borne diseases is one of the fastest ways that epidemics happen. And so being able to collect information on the types of viruses and the types of pathogens that mosquitoes are carrying can help the CDC and the World Health Organization predict disease outbreaks. And so, some of those things are public right now, but when you start to consider, controlling malaria, obviously the Gates Foundation has been deeply involved in that, but our Microsoft research team also has been deeply involved in it. And you wouldn't think a mosquito would be so powerful, but in the research that we've done, mosquitoes actually are incredibly powerful at, some good things and some not so good things. So the second aspect is transforming the limits of humankind. So how can technology help augment our own abilities? And so one of the best examples of that, actually, from Microsoft Research, which is available now, actually, is called Project Oxford. And so you'll also see a link up there for the public site for Project Oxford. So this is work that's been done in research for decades, quite frankly, on how computers can help, how computers can augment, really, human abilities. And so to give you a specific example, so the three APIs that are available now, and you can actually use this if you are developing software for your customers, these are available now to really make artificial intelligence available to you, whether or not you have that expertise. And so to give an example of kind of how people are using this, I'll use NASA just because I was there this week. For the speech APIs and the speech-driven actions into applications, they've actually used our speech recognition technology to transcript their videos. And so as you can imagine, as these spacecraft scientists are doing different experiments, they videotape a lot of them, many of them failures, some successful, that help them decide how to program these robotic spacecraft. And so the example that their chief knowledge officer actually gave me is he said, well, you know, we've been able to transcript all of our videos. And how this helped us is that we were having a problem with the Mars rover, and it turned out one of the sensors on it that triggered a bunch of other things was set to yes. And we couldn't remember why we set it to yes. But our scientists said, well, it was based on how we landed the spacecraft. And so the experiments that they did to simulate the Martian atmosphere was actually to shoot prototype spacecrafts out of a helicopter with a cannon, believe it or not. And so they wanted to review all of the videos that did this unsuccessfully and successfully to help the scientists remember. And so by transcripting all that, as you can imagine, NASA has so many videos. They were able to really easily search those videos for Canon, because that's not something they usually use, and find all the videos related to that experiment. And he said it was really transformative because there's no way they could have found that in the past.
And Allison, one thing I really love about Oxford is the story of how the research reaches the public and reaches partners of Microsoft. So deep learning is a new buzzword. We hear about it a lot in research. I know a lot of people heard about it. One of the very first successes of deep learning was actually at our Microsoft Research Lab in Beijing on speech recognition. And that group and that work is actually, you can see here on the slide, now available today to everybody on this call. You can go start working with the same speech recognition technology, that is the deep learning technology, that really showed people that there was something to do in deep learning, and now informs all of the Microsoft products that use speech, everything from Cortana to the Xbox speech recognition to the Windows speech system.
Well, and it's also really relevant today, right? When you think about artificial intelligence and machine learning, and it's funny to me, right? This is a new role for me, and I'm a storyteller, so I've been presenting a lot. And I remember at first when I joined this team, I was just so like intimidated, right? I'm like, AI, machine learning, like, oh my God, this is what I'm working on. And now it's kind of rolling off my tongue, which is a surprise to me. But here's why it's less of a surprise, is that, you know, if you think even today about how people are thinking about analytics and the trend towards using big data to make better business decisions, you know, the front end for many of that analysis is Microsoft Excel, right? Microsoft Office. And so we've built on that power to have, you know, what's right now Power BI, Power Business Intelligence. That's a product that's available right now. But really, the next rendition of that is all of this analytics that can help augment customer data, where you can use this public data to train machines to look for better trends and predictions to ultimately really change the way people are making business decisions. And so, you know, our product right now, Project Oxford, is actually part of a suite of products to help people on those lens. If you haven't heard of it, it's called Cortana Analytics. Cortana, as we mentioned before, is sort of our intelligent agent approach. And so a lot of this machine learning and artificial intelligence that we are working on in Microsoft Research will kind of more quickly be released under Cortana Analytics. So keep your eyes out. When I get a pause for a second, post a link to the Cortana Analytics website. But a lot of these elements are available right now to roll into products or projects that you have. So the last aspect of, I mentioned we focus on the limits of time, the limits of humankind, and the limits of computation. So as you can imagine, this invisible revolution and the massive amounts of data that are going to transform the way things happen, we're really starting to bump up against the limits of Moore's law. And so computation, you know, there's sheer compute power required for all of this data and to do useful things with it is going to start to be a limitation. Now, Microsoft's really uniquely positioned, obviously, with Azure, our deep investment in data centers, our reputation for security and trustworthy cloud computing positions us really well. But our teams are also thinking about what are the compute limitations that maybe we can help transform. David, could you share a little bit about what some of the research teams are working on?
Sure, I'd love to. The key thing I want to highlight is a project we call Catapult. Catapult is a way of really rethinking the data center for a world in which Moore's law may not hold much longer. So Moore's law is the observation that every 18 months, for the same cost, you can get double the number of transistors. Moore's law is the thing that has made computers double in performance for years. But the challenge of Moore's law is that every 18 months, yes, physics says you can double the number of transistors, but the cost to build the factories goes up by an order of magnitude. And so it's a big question, what's going to happen when it costs, you know, more money to build a factory than the GDP of the United States? It might be physically possible, but it's not going to be economically feasible. Where do we go from there? And our team in Microsoft Research and computer architecture, this is a great story because it started out purely as an academic style research. Just a bunch of people saying, this is the trend, this is where it's going. What happens 5 years out, 10 years out? And what they did is they went to Bing and said, you know, Bing, you're one of the biggest data center users in Microsoft, and you're going to hit this problem probably before anybody else. We have an idea of how to help you rethink the data center so that you won't be hurt by this. And the idea is to use reconfigurable computing. There's a technology, it's been around for a long time, called a field programmable gate array. It's a way of taking a piece of hardware and changing it on the fly to suit a specific application. And it's been around for a long, long time. People were talking about it when I entered graduate school, you know, back in the early 2000s, but no one had really put together all the pieces to say, what will it really take to take an entire data center, thousands and thousands of computers, and change it so that you have this reconfigurable piece plugged in just the right way to accelerate an application that's really important. Well, long story short, today, Catapult is in production, and if you're using Bing to search, you're most likely using one of these reconfigurable computers, which has been created to accelerate the way Bing searches the entire web and returns results to you. But the thing that's just even more exciting is that it's reconfigurable. It's not just about Bing, it's about a whole range of applications that would have been too expensive to deploy before, but now become possible at scale because we're deploying thousands and thousands of these Catapult boards. And we've even started a very limited partnership program with some academic universities to help academics get access to this hardware so they can extend this ecosystem that we're building of next generation hardware. And I put the link there, which has all the papers, explains it, all the pictures, all the information that you need to learn more about Catapult.
So we wanted to leave some time for Q&A, although you guys have definitely done a great job putting some questions in the conversation. I put up here the link to the Microsoft Research blog, but I really do also encourage following the Twitter handle if you are interested. It's at Microsoft Research MSFT. And the cool thing about, I think, following the Twitter handle is there's really a lot of amazing collaboration with a lot of thought leaders in this area. So if you, like me 7 months ago, didn't really know what machine learning or artificial intelligence meant or why it was important to you, you know, it's amazing how quickly all of this stuff is becoming more and more relevant. And so, you know, just by following some of the leaders and just by just by reading up on it, you can start to see how it can not only impact your business, but also impact your customer's business and build better solutions. And, you know, we're really working hard to make this available in a much easier way, and so that different companies can take advantage of some of the work that Microsoft Research has done. So with that, I want to, how do we use this to increase sales, says George. I need my message to be clear. Well, that is a good question. And for me, I'll just answer that from my perspective. Actually, I'll answer it from a Microsoft perspective. One of the things that we used to do at Microsoft is focus a lot on our products, right? What are our products now? What are their features and functions? And what do they do? And sell in that manner. And what we found is that you know, obviously we built a tremendous business on that, but more and more companies and our customers want to know that we're looking towards the future. They want to know how we're innovating and how we're investing in innovation. And so when you say, how can I use this to increase sales, what I really think about is, how do you tell a story about how your company is focused on innovation? Why should a customer bet on you? And how are you thinking about how these trends transform? And so we've seen sales deals really take a much different direction because of this focus on innovation. A customer wants to know that they're buying not just for today, but for the things that are going to impact them tomorrow. With millennials in the workforce, there is a ton of focus on being more and more innovative, and a lot of customers are really struggling with that. So how you use it to increase sales, honestly, it's capturing customers' belief in your company. That's sort of how I would answer that, George. Jonathan, anything to add on that front? I'm not sure if you're on mute or if you're with us.
Sorry, no, I was on mute.
I'll go to another question. Allison, you mentioned commercialization. Okay, can you talk a bit more about how Microsoft is making the work MSR is doing and how we can utilize it to drive our business forward? So the best example of that right now is Project Oxford, right? In the past, Project Oxford as a product, it would have taken a really long time to actually release that. And Project Oxford is available right now. So from a commercialization perspective, it's innovating faster, releasing faster, beta-ing, if that's a word, beta-ing things faster. And then the second aspect of commercialization is around partnering. And so my team exists to not only identify, okay, which of these research projects should be released fastest, what do we think is the most potentially lucrative, right? And then secondarily, what research projects are we working on that maybe aren't fully baked, maybe need someone else to help us in their thinking? What kind of collaborations could we do? What kind of joint products could we create? And this is a very new motion for Microsoft. This is not something that's been done before. And so when I talk about commercialization, it's really that twofold aspect. One, releasing things more quickly, you know, outside of our typical product release cycles. And number two, partnering more collaboratively. So what U.S. government policies are driving innovation, and what more can be done? How should we be asking government to help? Is government beyond NASA adopting some of these innovations? Doug, that's a fantastic question, and it's something I'm super interested in. As I said, I'm relatively new to that. Jonathan,
Can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think, you know, Jeff, as his follow-up to MSR's efforts to drive STEM or STEAM, not sure if you were including the arts in that, Jeff. But, yeah, I would say, let me just take a quick stab at that answer. So a couple of things that I think the government can be doing. So one is, and something that Microsoft has been and VFI has been focused on, and I'm going to include a link to this for those that don't know about it, is ensuring that there's a good legal and public policy framework in place to ensure that the cloud will continue to grow. And as you heard from, you know, what David and Allison were talking about, a lot of this research and a lot of the innovations that are coming out are based on having a strong cloud infrastructure. And so a number of the laws that were written around data privacy haven't been updated in the last 30 years. Literally, the last time this was updated was in 1986. So VFI has been focused on trying to educate our partners and then engage with our elected officials to encourage them to update these outdated laws. And so I will send, we could spend a lot of time talking about that, but so I will send a good backgrounder on this that we have on our Voices for Innovation site to everyone after the call. And I'd encourage everyone to write their elected officials, if you haven't done so, to encourage them to update these laws. So another area, and Jeff, thank you, is STEAM or STEM. STEM education. So again, ensuring that we are teaching science, technology, engineering, arts, and math in our K-12 as well as our colleges, and encouraging more children to pursue degrees like computer science and get more background in computer science. So again, Voices for Innovation has been very involved with trying to get all states, for example, to count computer science education towards a math or science degree for high school graduation. And so those sorts of things, again, get more people into the, you know, research areas, get more people involved in what I think is, you know, the digital economy that we're in, or at least, you know, the next generation will certainly be in. And so that's, you know, that's another thing.
I wanted to just chime in on a couple things right around STEM. So I know in my past role, we worked closely with the Small Business Administration on a project called STEM for Her. It was, you know, really focused on helping elevate the passion of women and women entrepreneurs to develop more technology-based innovations. And so it was a nationwide contest that we held in, you know, all 50 states in Microsoft stores as well as other venues, and had a, you know, reward program of $10,000 for the top three winners. We'll be doing STEM for Her again this year, really to elevate again the focus on STEM, on women entrepreneurs, on more diversities within STEM. It's something, you know, just focused on the diversity. It's something I'm passionate about. Not only was it at JPL this week, right, and I look around and really there were only three women in the room of 100 of this project. Not only that, but when I started working on Microsoft's corporate campus, I looked around and it was really, really apparent. And what's interesting to me is, you know, I'm working with Microsoft Research. I've had a now 11-year career at Microsoft. I'm a woman, but I was a marketing major. And so I think too often we think that STEM careers need to be focused on computer science or engineering, when the truth of the matter is that, you know, we need all kinds of skill sets. And having a career in technology or in a STEM field requires a lot more skills than only, you know, obviously the math and science that we're used to thinking about. And so we're working, in fact, I had a conversation with NASA to help elevate that awareness and saying, you know, careers are not just for science and engineering. You know, having a diverse workforce is really critical to that. I think we missed a question about security, so I want to make sure that we go revisit that one. And so to reiterate the question from Dovell, it looks like, Dovell, if I'm pronouncing that right, he said, all this is great, but what was not covered is how users securely authenticate themselves to all this data to prevent hackers and information theft. What are you doing to address this? And David, I know you had some comments on security.
Absolutely. That's a great question. I would encourage you to go take a look at the presentation from Satya Nadella and Julia White from last November. I'll cut and paste the link. But Julia White, in a remarkably short period of time, walks through pretty much the entire portfolio of Microsoft products and services and explains what is it that we're doing to help you and your partners and your customers improve security. For example, on Azure, we just released a thing called Azure Security Center, which is a one-stop shop for people who are using Azure to bring on security products that they may want to have. It's a one-stop shop for keeping track of security alerts from your Azure infrastructure. And it's a place for future partners to plug in. So without going into too much detail, I'm running an incubation right now, bringing some research we've done at Microsoft to partners and customers of Microsoft. And I'm excited about Azure Security Center because it means that I can get better reach for my incubation team. I can get my thing in front of all the eyes of all the admins of all the Azure in the entire Microsoft ecosystem. I think that's really exciting because it means that I get in front of exactly the right people who want to use it. And on the Windows side, Julia also talks a little bit about how Windows has finally added some technology to deal with the pass the hash issue, which has been a big thorn in our sides for a long, long time. By really creating a little isolated enclave that keeps all your secrets safe, even if the rest of the computer gets compromised. So I'd really just encourage you to go take a look at that. It is a high-level overview, but it's a great all-up story of what is Microsoft doing and how are the Microsoft products and services working together to address security. And pretty much every one of those has an MSR component to it, as well as there's additional, more further out MSR research on security and authentication. For example, my colleague Stuart Schechter, he has a really great website, and I'll go check and see if it's available outside the company, which trains you to remember a very long password. And it's amazing. When you use it, you don't even realize you're being subtly trained to remember this very long thing. It reminds me a bit of memorizing lines for a play, actually. You know, it seems daunting, but then after a while, you know, you've got the entire thing down. And that is important because it lets you use a long, secure password without having to, you know, remember, without having to compromise on security. So we have many different roles and different things there. But the place to start is Satya and Julia White's talk. Yeah, I know it's not a good idea, and we want to get rid of passwords. But one of the things we do in research is say, well, if you have to, how could you train people to remember them better? So the goal is to get rid of passwords. That's what we're going to do. But the research is supposed to also look at the other directions that, you know, we have to live with in the short term. Well, and I'll get those links out to the research papers where you can read in detail what is going on in that particular area of MSR, and I'll get the link out for everyone to see the Julia White and Satya Nadella story.
And there are a couple of comments in the IM on helping spread the word, and so yeah, I'll follow up through IMCP and then the Women in Technology group. I'm familiar with both of those groups, and so, you know, happy to see maybe we target something at WPC since it's a large audience in a single location. And someone had said, hey, is this US only? And the answer to that is absolutely not. You know, we have, as I mentioned, we have 7 labs all over the world. Our research teams are working on problems that impact the globe and that are applicable everywhere. So US is, you know, one focus, but these are global challenges, problems, and opportunities, and we're very focused on the global aspects of those things.
All right, we're getting close to time. Maybe one more question, and then I'll wrap up, if there are any.
I try to do a decent job of looking.
I think we've got all the questions.
Had any other. I love the fact that you guys have asked so many questions. It's so great to have it. So I think George Carlisle said one thing specific to my goals. I'm in the DC area. I got NIH, I'm assuming that's National Institute of Health, who leads genetics. How can I bring events with support from Microsoft Research? You know, let's take that offline, George. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I think it depends. I know we've got Gary Brummel on the phone. I am working with the federal team. I had the good fortune of being with them this week again on NASA. There was a lot of discussion about different federal agencies and helping, you know, share this message with the government. To answer kind of specifically, one of the intriguing things for me is that, you know, as we talk about this invisible revolution, Microsoft's unique position in compute power, to be honest, and secure data centers, we start thinking about the use of public data and how you can do useful things with it. And so Microsoft actually has a collaboration, one of our first, with NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. If someone can find that link, that'd be great. It's Microsoft and NOAA collaborate. But when you think about weather data, you know, it's a massive amount of data. But there's probably nothing that impacts our lives more, right? What should I wear? Is there a storm coming? Are schools going to be closed? You know, and so on the commercialization aspect, we're also working to help the government, you know, commercialize this data. So how can insurance companies use weather data to make better decisions? How can public safety plan better when there are disasters or disaster issues coming? How can you know, you provide useful weather data even to help retailers trigger competitive advantage in marketing. So if, for example, spring is coming early in North Carolina, how would you know that people are thinking about gardening early, and can you get a leg up on your competition by sending out a marketing message early? So those are the kinds of commercialization projects that we're working in partnership with other companies. We are, you know, definitely working with AccuWeather also as part of that NOAA initiative. And then as public data becomes more and more available, you know, what kind of opportunities exist for small businesses? I mean, again, that's kind of my background, so I'm pretty passionate about that. But there's all kinds of useful applications that can be built on public data as long as we can make it ingestible. And so Microsoft has a very big focus on that with our Open Data Gov initiative.
Hey, Allison, this is Gary. Just a quick comment. We're trying to do a better job, and I think we are this year, of bringing MSR, the research results to the D.C. area. There's George, just so you know, there's a HoloLens event the end of February. There's a call that's gone out to the account teams to invite customers to that. But we're going to make sure, ensure that we have organizations like the Office of Science, Technology, and Policy out of the White House, folks from DARPA, the Presidential Innovative Fellows, the list goes on, experience HoloLens, and we're hopeful that, you know, this will spawn additional opportunities to partner, to work with them more closely in the months and years to come. So I just wanted to bring that up as an aside.
Yep. And this is Jonathan, and we've worked with Gary as well, trying to include our, you know, VFI partners and coordinate with some of the things that he's doing. So we'll continue to do that as well. So that's great. So with that, I'll wrap up here and say, again, thank you for everyone for joining today. Especially thank you to Allison and David for a great presentation. Thank you for all your great questions. I'm going to summarize the links in a follow-up email. I've also recorded this, so I will send around a link to that once that is live. With that, I hope everyone has a terrific day, and thank you again for supporting VFI. One just quick plug, we have a webinar next week on the 20th with Chris Krebs, who's a cybersecurity expert of ours. If you haven't RSVP'd for that, it's on our website. It will be, again, Wednesday, January 20th at 10 a.m. I'll also send a link to that if you'd like to join it. So thanks again, everyone. Thank you, Allison, David, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you very much, everyone.
All right. Bye.